The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Glory to you, O Lord. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he put this question to his disciples. Who do people say the Son of Man is? And they said, some say he is John the Baptist, some Elijah, and others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. But you, he said, who do you say I am? Then Simon Peter spoke up. You are the Christ, he said, the Son of the living God. Jesus replied, Simon, son of Jonah, you are a happy man, because it was not flesh and blood that revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. So I now say to you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of the underworld can never hold out against it. I'll give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth shall be considered bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth shall be considered loosed in heaven. Then he gave the disciples strict orders not to tell anyone that he was the Christ. The Gospel of the Lord. Caesarea Philippi is one of those beautiful spots in the foothills of the snow-capped mountain, Mount Hermon, where fresh, clear water from the melting snow forms an inviting pools and lovely cascades. And it's a tributary of the Jordan. And the first pilgrimage we had to the Holy Land, we actually renewed our vows at that point. The following year, we went to the Jordan itself. But the time of Jesus, the city had been given to Herod. That's the Herod that was persecuting Jesus when he was a baby, by the Roman Emperor Augustus. And as a token of his gratitude, Herod built a palace to Caesar. And after Herod's death, his son Philip embellished the city and made it his capital and renamed it Caesarea Philippi. And there it boasted a new gleaming temple. Not the temple in Jerusalem. This was a pagan temple, but to the Greek god Pan. And it was called Panias. But the Arabs didn't have a P in their alphabet, so they called it Banias. And Banias is what it is today. But it's a place where paganism and Pan, the Greek god of flocks and herds, you know, playing the pipes of Pan, were worshipped with wild orgies. Well, it was at that point where pagan worship was offered, not the temple in Jerusalem. You remember last week, it was the Canaanite woman who was a foreigner came. It's up there that Jesus challenges that question. Who are people saying that I am? So it's safe to quote what other people are saying, isn't it? Somebody else is saying, not what do I say, but this is what other people are saying. It's an odd question, because you don't usually ask what are people saying. You might say, what are they saying about me? But you don't usually say, who do they say I am? Because you usually know who you are. And if you don't, there's probably a problem there. So it's a strange question he asks. Who are people saying that I am? And they were saying in their answers, well, actually, you're all the great days of the past coming together. Because there's Elijah and there's Jeremiah, one of the other prophets. And they're saying all those people in the past are, as it were, rolled into one in you, Lord. Ah, says Jesus, but who do you say I am? And of course, every group needs someone like a Peter who's can't stand an embarrassing silence, has got to give an answer, quickly jumps in with both feet, but nevertheless, fine, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. You are the Christ, the anointed one. The name means anointed one. At every baptism, I've got one after the after the 11 Mass and one this afternoon. I had one yesterday. Every time we get to a baptism, when they get to that bit of the anointing of chrism, I say, if you take the letter T off Christ and you put the letter M on, you've got the word chrism. Because that's the oil used for anointing. Christ means the anointed one. And of course, that chrism oil is used in our baptism. It's used in our confirmation. It's used in an ordination. It's used when a sovereign is being consecrated. And it's used, too, for the consecration of a church, the building, you mark the walls, and the consecration of the altar, the most important point. And that's because people were anointed to three great roles of religious leadership in the Old Testament. Remember, it's religious leadership. A priest was anointed to mediate with God for the people, to bring people to God, and bring God to people's lives. A prophet was anointed to reveal God's message to the people. A king was anointed to represent God's responsibility and care in leading and guiding the people. But now, for the first time, they're saying, all this comes together in this human person who is Son of God and Son of Man. And that's what Peter says. You're not just a mere Son of Man. You are the Son of God. So Jesus, having asked, who do you say I am, he then says, now, Peter, you are the rock, and you're the rock on which I'm going to build my church. And so there's a great moment of recognition of who Jesus is, of what his ministry is, of what his mission is, and who can, after him, carry it out. The message will be maintained. And so it is. So all who are baptized into the Catholic Church are anointed with that sacred chrism. And it's with these words, he now anoints you with the chrism of salvation, so that united with his people, you may remain forever a member of Christ, who is priest, prophet, and king. So it continues. So as I say, baptism. We've had weddings, many funerals, baptisms as well. All part of there, the oil of chrism. And it continues. And so does Peter. Interesting, during this week, Peter today is Pope Francis. And Pope Francis was in Korea last weekend, and he gave the Asian youth a wake-up call, urging them to be witnesses for Christ in everything they do, to reflect God's love. And he said, do not be afraid to bring the wisdom of faith to every aspect of your life. So he was challenging them there. So Peter and the task that Jesus gave him continues. And he was saying some of that when he beatified 124 South Korean martyrs. In the 18th and 19th century, the Korean government went after about, it was 10,000 Christians. But what have we been seeing in Iraq, parts of Syria, where Christian communities and other religious minorities forced out of their homes? There's a place that was mentioned on the news last night, can't remember where it was, but where they've held out for 2 or 3 months, but they think they can't hold out much longer. Is it going to be another slaughter? And what we do know, this is never and cannot be of God. Not the God we believe in, not the God that Jesus came to show us. And so those may be forced to convert to Islam. And maybe it's a challenge to us and to others that we know. How strong is that faith? Peter's faith was strong enough. Man of little faith. 2 weeks ago, Jesus said to him, Peter, man of little faith. Next week, I think you'll get, get behind me, Satan. You don't know what you're saying to Peter. See, that's the way life can be. That's as it was for Peter, as it can be for us. But at the moment, the strong faith, you are the Son of God. That's why I wanted to concentrate on immortal, invisible, God only wise, who sent his Son so that we could know how to behave and who was God, because Jesus reveals him to us. And Jesus promises the gates of the underworld can't hold out against the church. But it's not the underworld, well it is, but not at the, it's on the surface, not the underworld we're fighting at the moment. The Christians in Iraq are not fighting the underworld. It's the evil and the wickedness of the jihadists. And it is a religious war, a thing the West can't understand, because religion's been sidelined for everything. So they don't understand, so we don't know how to fight it. We were told not to go. Pope John Paul II said, others, all the bishops urged not to go all those years ago. And we're seeing the fruits, and on it goes. So, but, Jesus says, nothing can hold out against the church. So hearing that gospel again today, it's a challenge to us. Can we say to Jesus, yes, you are the Christ, the Son of God, and we are the bricks of your church building today.